Ruthless, an EVE Online novella, written by Tony Gonzalez, adapted for audio by the EVE Reader podcast. Chapter 4, I Saw Your Ship. Location, Venal Region, Solar System 6NJ8 TAC-V, Planet 7 Moon 2, Garista's Logistics Support Station. Three times, Bane thought as his hover chair locked into position inside his personal quarters. Three times I've asked the both of them, as a father would to his own children, to cease this madness. The guards escorting him silently left the room as mechanical arms extended over his ancient, cybernetic body and inserted neural links into the sockets implanted within his skull. I raised them as my own, taught them as my own, empowered them as my own, and now look at the disgrace they have become. The mental view of his surroundings, as seen through the cameras attached to the hover chair, was replaced with a virtual, three-dimensional image of the Garista's data network. Never in my old age did I expect betrayal such as this, least of all from Otro, he thought. His natural vision long since departed, Bane grunted as his mind located and read the decrypted report intercepted from Ishikone Watch. Another one of Ishikone's convoys was lost to an ambush within the borders of Empire Space, and there was no question who was responsible for the attack. All I asked of them was to let Ishikone's ships be. The rest of the universe was theirs for the taking, but no, they insisted on carrying through with this absurd ideological vendetta. Bane was not the sort to hesitate making harsh decisions when it came to disciplining military personnel. He was rumored to have destroyed ships in his own fleet whenever captains questioned his orders during combat. The fact he gave Otro three warnings was symbolically identical to being granted life three times. Bane would not extend the privilege a fourth time. With another thought, the report was replaced with a map of the system surrounding the Mara system. Again, the debris field was located within 15 jumps of the forward listening post near the three Empire crossings. The predictability disgusted him. Patterns are a death wish, he thought, and those two fools will know the consequences of their own stupidity soon enough. Despite the reoccurrence, there was something different about this attack. Bane quickly scanned through the latest Ishikone shipping itinerary that Lessa Keelan had provided him as part of their long-standing agreement. The discrepancy was obvious. The Trevanny was destroyed while traveling someplace it shouldn't have been. There is absolutely no reason why an Ishikone convoy should have been in the Mara system, Bane thought, unless they were trying to go around something. In fact, the log listed her as dry docked for maintenance and refitting, with the next scheduled escort mission 1 week from today. Ever since the attack started, Akeelan would call within minutes of every lost convoy to share his pointed opinions about Garista's incompetence. But not this time, and the report was almost 48 hours old. That was very uncharacteristic of a control-crazed tyrant like Akeelan. Bane could think of several possible reasons for that lack of outrage this time around, but as always, the simplest explanation seemed the most plausible. Akeelan just didn't know about the Trevanny. That possibility begged all kinds of questions that Bane decided he needed answers to, very quickly. He willed the map to display all the systems around the checkpoint that the Trevanny failed to reach. Nav Theta was along a shipping route that ended in the Nani system, and only Ishikone competitors had stations in the systems along the most direct and most secure route from the Malkalin system. The only non-competitors were the Kaldari Navy and the Home Guard, and both were in the Nani system. No starship pod deliveries were scheduled at either facility for at least 1 month. Bane's wrinkled brow furled into a full-blown scowl. It had to be Navy, he thought. But why avoid taking the most direct route to get there? As senior as Bane was within the Garista's cartel, even he lacked the authority to initiate contact with an agent inside the Kaldari Navy. His request would have to be approved by Fatal, who personally maintained a formidable spy network within the Kaldari state. But regardless of the answer, Bane would order his scouts to concentrate their search for Otro and Gavriel around the forward bases near the Empire border. In the meantime, he would prepare his own strike fleet. Fatal, one of the two renegades eliminated for threatening the extremely profitable relationship that the Garista shared with Ishikone. Bane wanted them both dead for much more personal reasons. Location, Pure Blind Region, Solar System ROIR TAC-V, Garista's Deep Space Observation Platform, Forward 9. The base setup was identical to all the others, sparsely furnished but heavily stocked with all manner of supplies for both ships and crew. Hidden along the border with the Caldari state, the Forwards were small, unmanned stations built quickly and established as resupply bases to support Garista's incursions into Empire space. Crammed with sophisticated electronic eavesdropping equipment, the bases also served as listening posts to intercept cross-border communication traffic. Terabytes of data were intercepted each day and relayed to processing stations for storage and, if possible, decryption. The Garistas had lured some of the best cryptologists in Empire space to their underworld to decipher the mountain of information channeled through stargates, and both Gavriel and Ocho recognized early on that their success would lean heavily on having cryptologists of their own. Paying 10 times the rate that the Garistas offered, Ocho hired them to sift through intercepted data and catalog anything that had to do with the Ishikone Corporation. In the 6 hours since Ocho's fleet had arrived from Forward 6, Mila had been devouring the information revealed by their efforts with insatiable fascination. Mila was able to reconstruct the financial history of Ishikone, both the public version and reality, with astonishing detail. Everything from warehouse inventory records to employee payrolls, corporate debt structuring to shipping invoices, executive meeting notes to a general account ledgers, and every component of Ishikone's strategic plans for the upcoming fiscal year was revealed to her. A very dark picture began to emerge as she reconciled these findings with the data compiled through Sawtelle's, confirming everything that Gavriel had warned her about and more. Typing furiously, she was constructing an analysis as fast as her brain could absorb and process the information. Peering through the lab window, Ocho watched as his sister manipulated the 3 screens in front of her.
How long has she been in there?
Gavriel was beaming.
From the moment we arrived. She has your father's intelligence, and her ability to process information is remarkable.
She gets that from my mother. Dad mentioned that she was always a fast learner. It just comes naturally to her.
Gavriel nodded, admiring the way Mila's hair fell over the top of her shoulders as she shifted her attention from one screen to the next.
It is a miracle that we found her.
It's unbelievable, but we're going to need many more miracles to keep this up.
You underestimate the strategic value that Mila brings to the table. For the first time ever, we can accurately gauge the financial impact of our efforts against Ishikone. In fact, I don't believe that we're fighting a guerrilla war anymore. From now on, each of our strikes will be surgical, with anticipated, quantifiable, long-term consequences instead of random hit and runs.
It's Bane that concerns me, not Ishikone. We're being hunted by the very man who gave us both a new life. Not to mention that he taught us everything we know about naval combat.
Bane's interest in us was purely investment value. Just 2 more recruits to help turn the Garista's greed machine. You shouldn't view it any other way.
True, but it doesn't change the fact that he's trying to kill us, and rightfully so. He has the power to bring as many resources as he thinks he needs to get the job done. We don't have sanctuary here or in Empire space, and I'm responsible for all the men and women who joined us. One way or another, we have a big fight coming our way, and the odds are stacked against us. Let her know that she's got about an hour before we need to leave again. I'm going to start making my rounds with the troops.
Gavriel opened his mouth to speak, but Ocho was already out the door. Without even realizing it, he shifted his weight nervously. It felt strangely intimidating to be alone in Mila's presence. Location: Lone Trek Region, Malkalin 5, Moon 1, Ishikone Corporate Headquarters. Between his prowess with financial investments and his enormous compensation from Ishikone, the corporate life had made Ralarashi Okima wealthier than he could have ever imagined. Earlier in the day, he put his vast fortune to use by secretly replacing the Ishikone property that was lost in the ambush that killed his personal envoy to the Caldari Navy. Most Caldari citizens would have to work a lifetime to save enough money to purchase a single ship. Raleigh had just bought 5. Among his dealings was the acquisition of a Caracal-class cruiser that he promptly renamed Trevani, which was now sitting in the dry dock where the Ishikone shipping itinerary said it should be. As usual, Raleigh returned late at night to his luxury station home to find it empty. His wife had long since stopped bothering to leave notes indicating where she was going with the kids, or for how long they'd be gone. As far as she was concerned, such an effort would be a waste of time. It was obvious to her that Ishikone responsibilities were far more important to Raleigh than family matters, and that was that. She had long since given up trying to persuade him otherwise. Raleigh took a long look at the bed that he was supposed to share with his wife and decided that he would never be able to fall asleep. The board meeting was in less than 6 hours, and there was nothing more he could do to prepare for it. He couldn't tell them about the Raven, not without an ink deal to justify the cost. All he could do was hope to survive the meeting without losing his job. Not wanting to be alone with his anxieties to torment him, He left and warily made his way down the concourse towards one of the station's lounges. Raleigh was fairly certain that he was once genuinely happy, madly in love, and determined to work as hard as he could to support his family. On that last point, he had succeeded, but he had failed miserably as a husband and father in the process of advancing his career, and the relationship with his family deteriorated accordingly. His marriage was typical of the Caldari corporate elite. Both husband and wife felt unappreciated in their perceived roles as providers. Both viewed each other as incapable of understanding the responsibilities which accompany their roles, and both became accustomed to assuming that the lack of understanding was, in fact, pure indifference that betrayed just how fragile their relationship was. If Raleigh and his wife of 10 years were not officially separated, then that was just a legal technicality that would put a title on the true state of affairs within their marriage. The emotional separation had already taken place long ago. On the eve of the most important, and perhaps final, board meeting of his career, the contempt that Raleigh held towards Les Sakilin had become an intense and dangerous distraction. Thinking about his family made it even worse. He had to try and unwind as much as he could, lest the anger become too obvious to the board members tomorrow. There were only a few patrons in the lounge, and no one noticed him walk in. Choosing one of the many bar stools with a good view of the space outside the station, Raleigh took a seat. Although he was never much of a drinker, Raleigh decided, against his better judgment, to order something that would get him intoxicated as quickly as possible.
"I'd like a Minmatar chest wound, please."
The bartender looked at him as if he was crazy, then shrugged and began preparing the drink. While Raleigh waited, he startled at the sound of a yelp followed by a crash. When he turned around, he saw a young woman dressed in a business suit laying face down on the floor. Data pads and research papers were scattered haphazardly around her. Raleigh jumped out of his chair to assist her.
"Are you okay?"
"Damn it!"
the woman said, pushing herself to her knees. The first thing Raleigh's eyes found was the immense cleavage that sat between the lapels of the woman's business suit. She never looked up at him, but instead started to gather together all the data pads around her.
"I'm such an idiot!"
"Here, let me help."
Raleigh's eyes moved upward of her chest and saw that she was positively gorgeous, almost shockingly so. As he reached down to pick up some of the papers on the floor, she reached out quickly and slapped him on the hand.
"Don't touch those!"
she scolded him, looking up at him for the first time.
"I'll get them myself!"
She stopped in mid-sentence, and her angry expression suddenly turned to recognition, then shock. Her jaw dropped, and she covered her mouth with her hand.
"Oh my, I'm so very sorry, sir. This is so embarrassing. I really do apologize."
"It's okay, really. Do you mind if I give you a hand?"
She placed her hands on her temples.
"This is so typical. I can't believe how stupid I am."
She was clearly flustered. She started scurrying about to collect the data pads.
"I mean, of course you can help, or you don't have to. That's very gracious of you, sir."
She shook her head as if she was disgusted with herself. Raleigh laughed a little.
"Why are you calling me sir?"
She stood up slowly, placing the data pads on a chair. The pinstripes of her suit really did accentuate the curves of her figure.
"Aren't you Raleigh Rashi Okimo, the chief financial officer of Ishikon?"
Raleigh was shocked that anyone could be so humbled in his presence.
"Yes, I am."
She took a clumsy step forward and extended her hand.
"It's an honor to meet you, sir."
"Nice to meet you, Miss..."
"Henska. Capri Henska. I just started here at Ishikon a few days ago."
She smiled, completely awestruck. He couldn't remember the last time he felt this good.
"That's fantastic. Judging from all the papers, I'd say you're in R&D.
"Yes, sir. I'm an analyst there. My job is to look at declassified military technology and find markets for it within the commercial and retail sectors."
She gazed at him with the most adoring look he'd ever seen.
"I've always wanted to meet you, sir. I even wrote a paper about you while I was at the Science and Trade Institute."
He placed the stack of papers onto the same chair as the data pads. Her stunning looks aside, Raleigh decided that enjoying every moment of this young woman's company was exactly what he needed.
"Please, call me Raleigh. Can I get you something to drink?"
"I'll have whatever you're having."
Location: Pure Blind Region, Solar System ROIR-TAC-V, Garista's Deep Space Observation Platform, Forward 9. Gavriel sat staring in stunned disbelief at the three screens. Mila was beside him, resting her hands against her forehead and appearing exhausted. After hours of poring through the data, her initial analysis was finally complete. Gavriel had been speechless since the moment she finished presenting him with a summary of her findings. Stifling a deep yawn, Mila waited patiently for him to absorb the shock of everything he had just learned. Les Akilin's tenure at Ishikon was tumultuous right from the start. Appointed CEO during the height of the Fade mining boom, The move caught corporate insiders by surprise, as Ishikoden was excelling financially under the previous leadership. Needless to say, shareholders were not impressed with Les Akilin's credentials. Aside from the celebrity status associated with his immensely wealthy family and powerful political allies, it was also widely known that Les wasn't especially bright and had no business experience to speak of. Investors openly questioned Akilin's ability to continue Ishikoden's surge of growth into industries other than starship pod manufacturing, and the stock began to plummet. The investors' concerns proved valid. Akilin's first mandate as CEO was to take advantage of the firm's monopoly on heavy elements and fade. He initially doubled and then quadrupled the price of all commodity exports produced from the Drenali system. The move created a huge spike in profits for Ishikoden, but also infuriated corporate and private buyers from all over Kaldari space. The prices for the commodities were so outrageous that it prompted the creation of a coalition made up exclusively of Ishikoden competitors. Each member corporation agreed to share the costs of funding research and exploration into the regions adjacent to Fade in search of alternative sources of heavy elements. When vast uranium and plutonium deposits were discovered in the Pure Blind region, which sits right on the border with the Kaldari state, the coalition wisely decided against attempting to recover their exploration costs quickly. Instead, they opted to exert their newfound market influence gradually by charging the same prices for the commodities as they were before Akilin came to power. The effects were immediate. Contracts with Ishikoden were voided, and the money flowed away from the Fade region and into the Pure Blind systems by the billions. Akilin responded by filing breach of contract lawsuits against every coalition member within the Kaldari Business Tribunal, but suffered humiliating defeats in each one of them. To make matters worse, wholesalers and small-cap corporations were collectively filing an antitrust suit against Ishikoden for excessive price fixing, citing that the unreasonable hike in commodity expenses caused unfair financial hardship to their own respective business. Ishikoden was now left with a defunct deep space mining operation that would cost a fortune to maintain, plus enormous legal problems that would further cripple its ability to compete in any markets beside pod manufacturing. In a maligned effort to compensate for his mistakes, Akilin sought ways to cut costs as quickly as possible. To start, he voided Ishikoden obligations to consultants and industry contractors, especially those operating beyond Empire space. Hardest hit were the contractors that had settled on Drenali 7, which of course included Valamo Gariushi. If you included the settling family members that the contractors had brought with them, the people directly affected by Akilin's treachery numbered in the millions. The hardships suffered in the outer regions went largely unnoticed, mainly because of the worker protests and legal issues that were drawing all the attention of the regulators in Empire space. Still unsatisfied with the adjusted results of his bottom line, Les Akilin contacted the Garistus cartel. While millions of people starved on Drenali 7, Les plotted even more sinister actions to appease his ego at the expense of countless others by planning direct retribution against his competitors for their combined efforts to undermine him. Industrial espionage always has, and continues to be, according to Mila, an unspoken reality within the Kaldari corporate domain, but Akilin shattered the delicate rules of that game as well. In exchange for the unrestricted passage of Ishikoden vessels throughout Garistus-controlled space, Akilin would provide the pirate cartel with the shipping itineraries of as many rival corporations that his spies could get. Bane quickly agreed, and the slaughter began. Mila even discovered evidence which proved that Akilin had requested attacks against specific Ishikoden ships. Records indicated that those doomed vessels carried various undesirables affiliated with Ishikoden whose deaths, while tragic, were conveniently beneficial to him. The open exchange of information between Akila and the Garistas led Ishikoden down even darker paths. Les refined the amnesty agreement by negotiating a deal with Bane to purchase the cargo stolen from ships that the Garistas ransomed or salvaged at cost. The deal broke Akilin's profit margin wide open because it reduced his own operating expenses to almost nothing, while escalating his competitors' expenses to a level that was impossible to sustain. Completing the domination of Pure Blind's economics was the establishment of Ishikoden Watch as a legendary protective force. While competitors struggled to find industrial freight captains willing to run the perilous shipping lanes into deep space, Ishikoden's survival rate was close to 95%, and thus drew the greatest number of shipping contracts. Naturally, Les started leapfrogging the cost upward for those services as well. By the time she was finished, Mila had produced a staggering list of illegal activities committed by the Ishikoden Corporation, and these were hardly the paper-pusher misdemeanors typically associated with white-collar crimes. there was enough evidence to secure indictments for a range of hardcore felonies that would result in the permanent takedown of Ishikone and death sentences for all of its senior-level executives. Each was backed up with a mountain of damning evidence. She found employee layoff records from factories that coincided with unusually high spurts in productivity from the same facility, with no evidence of assembly line upgrades or anything else that could account for the increased output. She noticed that Ishikone construction projects across all of its developing deep space territories were suddenly being completed ahead of schedule and under budget, despite having projected delays just weeks before. And, of course, there were the actual transmissions containing the competitor shipping itinerary schedules, all relayed through and captured by the forward Garista's bases. All told, Mila estimated that Lessa Keelan was responsible for direct competitor losses of more than 3 trillion ISK in ships, equipment, and cargo, to say nothing of the immense loss of life resulting from the vicious ambush of convoys in unregulated space. Most, if not all of those losses, translated directly into profits for Ishikone in the same period of time. As large as that number was, it still did not include the abstract consequences of losses to competitors, such as in cost overruns, project delays, and consumer confidence. Ishikone's stock was finally back to where it was before Keelan was appointed. Only no one, save for his inner circle of advisors, knew exactly how Ishikone had recovered. The financial analysts reviewing the quarterly and yearly numbers all pointed to effective cost-cutting measures, superior management, and precise resource allocation as the sole factors behind the newfound stability of the corporation under Akeelan's leadership. And the board of directors, obsessed with image and industry reputation, was too eager to see the stock's continued climb to bother questioning the numbers or the methods that made them possible in the first place. The rough start by Akeelan years earlier was conveniently attributed to first-time CEO jitters, and that Ishikone's climbing revenues was proof of his coming of age in the corporate world. Gavriel continued staring blankly at the figures on the 3 screens. Displayed across them were the names of some of the largest, most powerful corporations in the Kaldari state. Each was assigned an enormous figure specifying the amount of money that Mila figured Lessa Keelan had stolen from them. Some of the names included Lydai, CBD, Prompt Delivery, Sukavesta, and Kaldari Constructions.
So, what do you think?
What do I think? Let's see.
Gavriel just started shaking his head.
I think there's enough evidence here to start a ferocious war within the Kaldari state, at least.
That was my thinking as well.
Mila leaned back in her chair.
I haven't even tried to figure out the economic costs of all this, such as how Ishikone's interactions with corporations from other sovereignties weigh into the equation. The repercussions of Akeelan's actions throughout the EVE economy must be staggering. We should probably figure out how far they go.
I don't believe that will be necessary, Mila.
Gavriel suddenly shifted his gaze and appeared more focused.
Tell me, have you uncovered anything about the officers that report directly to him?
All of them were appointed by Akeelan and have direct knowledge of what he's doing, except for one, who was assigned by the board of directors.
And who might this officer be?
It's funny that you should ask.
Location, Lone Trek Region, Malkalin 5, Moon 1, Ishikone Corporate Headquarters. Raleigh drowned his 3rd chest wound in a single gulp, ignoring the scorching sensation in his throat and stomach. Capri started giggling as he nearly fell off his stool while setting the glass back down on the bar.
So you see, Capri, that's pretty much how I became the chief financial officer of Ishikone.
Raleigh's eyes opened wide in astonishment as Capri also downed her 3rd chest wound in a single gulp.
Whoa, that was most impressive.
She flashed a coy smile, getting close enough to him that the edge of her shirt was just barely skimming against his shoulder. Raleigh was no longer capable of trying to be discreet about staring directly at her chest. She lifted his chin with 2 fingers and got close enough so that he could smell the alcohol on her breath.
A woman can do anything that a man can, Raleigh. Only better.
Raleigh just stared back into her green eyes while the rest of the room spun around them. His marriage suddenly seemed very, very distant.
What are your career aspirations here at Ishikone?
Let's see.
She rolled her eyes thoughtfully and motioned to the bartender for another round before answering.
Well, to be honest, just getting here was such a challenge that I haven't had time to think about what's next. I suppose that I'm not all that thrilled about working for my boss. I wouldn't mind being in charge of my department and giving other recruits the big piles of work to do.
Capri caught his look and knew that she had succeeded in setting him up perfectly. she would be able to get the information that Mila had instructed her to fish for. Feigning a slight cough, she activated the tiny voice recorder sewn into the lapel of her suit.
So, how do you like working for Lessa Keelan?
Location, Venal Region, Solar System 6NJ8 TAC-V, Planet 7 Moon 2, Garista's Logistics Support Station. Bane narrowed the possibilities down to one of the three forward bases, 1, 2, or 9. Otra would be in that general vicinity, preparing for another series of raids against Ishikone convoys. After selecting a staging area that was approximately equidistant from each base, Bane gave the order for the fleet to move out. The location he chose would give him a response time of 10 minutes or less from the time his scouts made contact. The attack plan depended on speed. The faster it was over with, the better. Firepower wasn't the problem. He was certain that he had Otra outnumbered at least 8-1, but he would also be asking his crew to open fire on other Garista ships, and possibly to even engage them in a gunfight on board one of the bases. The longer the fight drew itself out, the more difficult it would be to maintain morale. Too bad that it would be over for them quickly, Bane thought as he watched his battleship clear the hangar. Otra and Gavriel should be made to suffer for as long as possible. Location, Lone Trek Region, Malkalin 5, Moon 1, Ishikone Corporate Headquarters. Raleigh was now flat on his stomach in bed, fully asleep and drooling steadily all over his pillow. Capri gently removed the man's shoes and pulled the covers up to his neck. She practically had to carry him for most of the walk back to his quarters, and they made a few stops along the way for him to vomit. He was barely coherent when they finally arrived, and unconscious the moment he collapsed into bed. After setting a glass of water on the nightstand, she hurried out of the room and made for the door leading back out to the concourse. Making a note of her surroundings as she walked, the home reminded her more of a museum rather than a place where a family lived. Everything was spotless. Every item and ornament was in perfect alignment with everything else. Yet there was an undeniable emptiness that stood out more than the priceless statues and works of art that adorned the walls. The home was a mirror image of Raleigh himself, materially plentiful, but utterly devoid of any soul. The next shuttle off the station was heading to the Caldari Funds and Limited Investment Bank at Malkalin 4, and she would have to hurry to catch it. Thankfully, it would barely be a 5-minute trip. The information she had to pass along to Mila was of epic importance. Location, Pure Blind Region, Solar System ROIR TAC-V, Garista's Deep Space Observation Platform, Forward 9. Otro stood with his arms folded, listening intently to Mila and Gavriel as they explained the facts to him. When they finished, he took a moment to think before speaking.
This Raven, is it as powerful as Raleigh says it is?
And then some. It's the ultimate standoff weapon. Nothing else in the Caldari arsenal can put that much firepower on a single target in such a short period of time.
Can it be defended against?
Gavriel shook his head.
That many launchers would overwhelm any point defense system, and no matter what kind of shields the target is using, a smart Raven captain still has the valid options of either using brute force against a specific protection type, or switching to a completely different warhead. No one out there is prepared for anything like this. Even if you could jam its targeting systems, and you might need several ships to do it, she could still use friend or foe missiles to force you to shut your jammers down and run. This ship is the real deal.
So what you're saying is the Raven is a map drawer.
It's a what?
Build a few of them and you can redraw the map. The Raven tilts the balance of power in favor of whoever owns it. And even if you have less ambitious goals, just selling the technology will bring you into a different kind of power. The kind that only money can buy. You say the Navy is the only client that Raleigh was trying to pitch this to?
To the best of my knowledge, that is correct. And from the looks of it, the Trevani was carrying Raleigh's reps to meet with them.
And you're certain that Akaline doesn't know anything about it?
We know a great deal about Mr. Akeelan and his inner circle, and I can assure you he doesn't have a clue. If he did, Raleigh would probably be dead.
How was he able to pull this off?
Raleigh Rashi Okimo is extremely intelligent and very resourceful. It also helps that he's extraordinarily wealthy. Technically, the members of the Raven team are not Ishikone employees. They report directly to Raleigh and perform all of their work in a fully stocked ship hangar facility that he's kept rented for almost 3 years. We don't know which station is the host, but it's definitely not on Ishikone property, and we know that it exists within Empire space.
He funded that all himself just to spite Akeelan?
You don't become the CFO of Ishikone Corporation without knowing how to disguise a few expenses on a balance sheet. I'm sure that he passed along as much of the cost as he felt he could get away with.
I'm really starting to like this guy, thought Otro.
Why is Akeline so tough on him?
Because the board of directors appointed him to the position. Akeelan has always treated him as an outsider, and warned his advisors to stay away from him. He felt directly threatened by Raleigh's intelligence, and oftentimes humiliated him in front of others by giving him tasks typically assigned to drones, such as cleaning restrooms, picking up after him, etc.
So he really hates him?
Gabriel could see that Otro was thinking really hard about something.
The word hate doesn't fully describe it. From what we've learned, every one of us in the room will have killed Akeelan by now. My agent made it perfectly clear that if nothing else, Raleigh is extremely vulnerable. The board meeting is just hours from now, and his intent was to surprise them with the Raven and a multi-billion ISK Navy contract.
Just to prove his competence to them.
Correct. Now, and I don't mean to be vindictive here, but because of you, that scenario is no longer possible. And Raleigh is convinced that this is the meeting where he will be ousted and replaced.
Who's up next to replace him?
If the board decides to allow Akeelan to fill the position himself, which is likely considering the turnaround in Ishikone's revenues, then he will almost certainly nominate his son, Jasal.
Is your agent still in Malkalyn?
Yes, she should be.
Is she reliable?
She's one of my best, but what are you—
Tell her not to leave the system. I think it's time that we had a chat with Mr.—
The radios attached to the shoulders of both Otro and Gabriel began squawking simultaneously. A panicked voice came through the static.
Sanctuary, this is Recon 6. Tripwire. Repeat, tripwire. 4 heavies, 8 mediums, mini lights. Goddamn. I just shot my wingman down. I'm locked up and jammed. There's new room out here. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Recon 6, going down. Mayday, mayday.
Both radios went silent. Gabriel jumped out of his chair. Mila suddenly looked panicked.
What does that mean?
It means our adversary is within 10 jumps of here, and that 2 of our reconnaissance pilots are now dead.
What it means is that the old man is coming to collect, and that it's time to leave. Gavriel, don't let her out of your sight.
Understood. Mila, if you'll please follow me.
She quickly followed him outside, leaving Otro staring at the Ishikone data still sprawled across the 3 screens. I'm sick and tired of running, Otro thought. Enough is enough. This concludes Chapter 4 of Ruthless and Episode 61 of the Eve Reader podcast. Cast details and production notes are available at evereader.org/ruthless. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in learning more about the rich history of the Eve universe, please visit the Eve Chronicle site at community.eveonline.com/backstory/chronicles. Copyright information regarding the Chronicles in this podcast may be found at evereader.org/copyright.html.